Of course.
Good afternoon, everyone. I hope you don't fall asleep in committee since we all had pizza up at the Metro Parks thing, because I want to sleep now. But with that, I will convene the House Education Finance Committee for March 12th. First order of business is approving the minutes. Has anybody had a chance to look at the minutes for March 10th? Representative Lee.
I move the minutes from March 10th.
Representative Lee moves the minutes for March 10th. All those, any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed say no. The minutes for March 10th have been adopted. Members, today we are going to be focusing on local operation revenue funding and how to make it a little bit more equitable. And we're also going to kick off the discussion on special ed bill backs. So all the bills are going to be laid over for possible inclusion. And with that, I think we'll move to our first bill. Actually, our first two bills are Representative Green. So I'll let her pull her folders out and get settled. And then we will move on. And oh, here, I might as well make a reminder for next week. Representative Chair Crescia will have the gavel on Tuesday and Thursday is actually our Eid break, so we will not be having a meeting on March 19th. So with that, welcome to your committee, Representative Green. Would you like to move House File 3790 over before the committee with the intention to lay it over?
Yes, thank you so much, Chair. I move 3790 for possible inclusion later.
Thank you. With that, 3790 is before us, members, and go ahead and present your bill.
Thank you so much, Chair. In October of 2025, the University of Minnesota abruptly canceled graduation ceremonies at the University of Minnesota's Mariucci Arena for the spring of 2026. This impacted over 20 school districts, months after many of them had already made commitments and announced the date and location of the ceremonies to students and families. Large graduation ceremonies require specialized facilities that most districts just don't own, and it requires venues that could hold up to around 5,000 people. This late announcement from the U set off kind of a scramble among school districts with few other options, all competing simultaneously for the same limited pool of large venues across the Twin Cities. Affected districts were forced into premium alternative venues at costs far exceeding what they had previously budgeted. Originally, MDE had approved school districts to use the use of lease levy authority for these graduation ceremonies. And for a little bit of background, to tap lease levy dollars, districts must go through approval through MDE. MDE will then determine whether the lease is reasonably priced, appropriate for the district's needs, and whether or not they meet the statutory requirements of use, which is instructional purpose, storage, or furniture repair. However, in 2024, MDE issued new guidance stating that sites could no longer lease for graduation events because they were not considered instructional purpose, therefore no longer eligible. I see it a little bit differently. I think high school graduation is the formal conclusion of a student's educational career. It's the moment that the school board and district officially certifies that a student has met all required standards and credit requirements to receive their diploma. Many times 13, 14 years of work that they have put into this. It is a big deal. Teachers come. At my son's graduation, their senior class always nominates their favorite teacher to be the keynote speaker. And from the stage, the teacher will share with many times 600-700 kids about, and in this particular incident with this teacher that at my son's graduation, she talked about how when she graduated from high school, she had big dreams to attend the college in Alaska, only to find herself in a full-blown panic attack the first day of class, 1,500 miles away from home. So her lesson to the kids that day was, you will fail, but you're going to be okay. To me, that's instructional purpose. So House File 3790 clarifies language and would once again allow districts to use lease levy authority to rent or lease building space for graduation ceremonies. And I have a testifier. We can move to testifier's chair.
Thank you, Representative Green. With that, we have, I think it looks like we have two testifiers up here. I have John Morstad and Anya Mota, can you both just come forward and sit at the table? And once you get settled, go ahead and state your name for the record and who you're with, and proceed with your testimony. Go ahead, John. We're going to go with John Morristad first.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members, for the opportunity to testify. My name is John Morristad. I'm the Executive Director of Finance and Operations with Osseo Area Schools, as well as the past president of the Minnesota Association of School Business Officials. I'm here today not only on behalf of Osseo and Maswell, but also the Association of Metropolitan School Districts to speak in support of this House file. Minnesota's lease levy statute has long provided districts with a narrow and highly regulated tool to lease spaces when doing so is more economical than constructing or expanding our own facilities. Statute allows leasing for instructional purposes, school storage, furniture repair, subject to the Department of Education approval and very strict cost controls. It's important to note that the statute itself has not changed in recent years to prohibit commencement ceremonies. What's changed is an interpretation of the statute by that approving agency. In recent years, MDE determined high school commencement ceremonies don't qualify as an instructional purpose. And again, as mentioned by Representative Green, we were informed very late that we couldn't do that. And then it caused some very significant changes in my district. The new cost for our commencements more than tripled for this year. The interpretation has significant real-world consequences. Many districts simply don't have facilities large enough to safely house graduation for students, families, and community members. Without that lease levy authority, districts are forced to redirect operational funds away from classrooms, rely on activity fees or donations, or limit attendance at once-in-a-lifetime events. Graduation is not an extracurricular activity. It is a culmination of an academic milestone of a student's K-12 education. While it may not involve direct instruction in the moment, it is inseparable from the instructional mission of public schools. Restoring explicit statutory authority does not expand levy authority or weaken oversight. What this change does provide is clarity and certainty. It aligns statute with long-standing district practice and recognizes that commencement ceremonies are a core school function that sometimes require leased space. In closing, this proposal corrects an unintended consequence of administrative interpretation, supports equity for students and families across Minnesota, and preserves fiscal discipline the legislature has already built into the lease levy law. So on behalf of districts across Minnesota, we respectfully ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Anya Mota, and I'm a student at Eastridge High School in Woodbury, and I also serve as a representative on the Minnesota Youth Council. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of this bill. Graduation is one of the most meaningful milestones in a student's educational journey. For many of us, it represents over a decade of hard work, perseverance, and the support of our teachers, families, and communities. It is the moment we work toward throughout our entire high school career. Graduation ceremonies aren't just celebrations or extracurricular activities. They're part of the educational experience itself. They recognize academic achievement, mark the completion of a public education, and provide a meaningful transition into the next stage of the lives of so many students. Because of this, it makes complete sense that graduation ceremonies should be fundable through school levies. When districts are unable to fund these ceremonies, the burden can shift to students and families. For example, at my school, Eastridge, when they canceled graduation at the University of Minnesota, each student had to pay an additional $30 fee to attend their own graduation. This creates unnecessary barriers and inequities for students who deserve the opportunity to celebrate their accomplishments alongside their peers. Every student who reaches graduation has worked extremely hard to get there, and every student deserves the chance to share that moment with their family and loved ones in a meaningful way. HF 3790 helps ensure that school districts have the flexibility to support graduation ceremonies as a part of the educational experience that they provide. Thank you for your time and consideration. I heavily encourage you, along with all the students in Minnesota, to support this policy.
Thank you so very much. With that, before we go to questions at the table, I'm going to actually have Ms. Beckel. Actually, could you go briefly through the fiscal note?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Solveig Beckel, House Fiscal. Yes, there is a fiscal note in your packets for House File 3790. Before I go through this fiscal note, I just want to remind the committee of the unofficial but very real $0 levy target that this committee has. Essentially, if there are any property tax impacts to a bill, the committee must pay those property tax levies down with their general fund state aid target. So it is not cost neutral to the committee if there are property tax levy impacts. So the fiscal note for House File 3790, on page one, it shows zero costs. But if you move to pages two and three, the Minnesota Department of Education provides some explanation. This wouldn't necessarily be no cost. It would have costs to the districts who choose to levy for graduation ceremony facility costs. MDE provides a list of the districts that have chosen to levy for these costs for the past 3 years. However, because this has not been an explicit allowance in statute, MDE felt that it was not possible for them to estimate a cost for this provision, that they did not have sufficient data, as they felt that perhaps more schools would levy for this cost if it were explicitly allowed. So if you look at page three, MDE states that MDE cannot predict the extent to which districts would utilize this measure if enacted. Therefore, the statewide levy impact is unknown, and so they have not put a cost to this bill.
Ms. Sylvain, could you tell us, when did the MDE change their guidance on this, and how, if it was being levied before, why would there be a fiscal note now when it was just a guidance change?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. In on page two of the fiscal note, under assumptions, they do actually explain that in fiscal year 24, MDE decided or determined that these lease levy funds, under their interpretation of the law, were not an approvable expense, and so they let school districts know that fiscal year 25 would be the final year such costs would be approved. To your second question, why would this now have a cost? Well, lease levy costs are built into the levy forecasts, and right now we are operating off of the February 2026 forecast, and that has not built in building lease levy costs for graduation ceremonies into the forecast for fiscal years 26 through 29.
Thank you, Ms. Beckel. With that, members, I think I'll go to questions at the table. Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there anyone from MDE in the room who could answer a question?
I think you channeled your chair, who's going to do the same thing. So yeah, we will have MDE come up to the table. And if one of the testifiers can just move aside to let thank you.
This is a style of story that I've heard many times in different committees and from constituents under different situations where a state agency makes a decision to change the interpretation of law after years of it being applied in a certain way in what seems to be an arbitrary fashion that nonetheless has a dramatic impact upon the folks who are being served. What was the impetus and justification for changing how the statute was interpreted from how it had been applied for years prior?
Mr. Ali, would you just state your name for the record and proceed?
Yes, Chair Joachim Samirajab, Assistant Director of Government Relations, Representative. When reinterpreting or looking at the statute back in 2024, Statute 126C.40, we looked at the explicit nature of allowing for academic purposes as well as for storage. And in our UFARS program codes, explicitly lays out a number of uses that can fall under those categories. So all activities dealing directly with the teaching of pupils, activities of aides or assistants of any type of who assist in educational process, interactions between teachers and pupils in the classroom at the kindergarten, elementary, and secondary levels, co-curricular activities at the kindergarten, elementary, and secondary levels designed to provide opportunities for pupils to participate and events for the improvement of skills and extracurricular activities, including boys and girls athletic directed or supervised by instructional staff in a learning environment similar to that found in courses offered for credit. So when doing our review in 2024 of the levy, we saw that though a small amount of districts were using it for graduation ceremonies, roughly 5 to 8 districts, that the rental graduation ceremonies did not fall under those UFAR program codes, and it was not explicitly laid out in statute stating graduation ceremonies. And I believe that's, you know, to Representative Green's point in this this proposal, it's trying to bring that back to districts in a way that is explicit into statute. And so that was what led to that decision back in 2024. Did not want to catch districts off guard, allowing them for that additional 1 year to levy for graduation ceremonies. But following that, we did provide guidance and laid it out to districts. I believe there was one follow-up in, from that guidance, and we had the conversations with that district. And I think that's kind of what brought us to that point here today.
Representative Hudson, follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I guess what I'm uncomfortable with is here we are considering a change to law that apparently was only made necessary by the way that the agency interpreted the law that we already have. And I'm not sure what instigates that. I mean, it sounds like it's a periodic review that you do no matter what, and decided you were going to interpret things differently. But we pass laws with an intent. And if that intent wasn't being fulfilled in the years previous, then that would have been brought to our attention and we would have changed the law or advised you to interpret it differently. And again, this, I don't want to pick on MDE. I've heard similar concerns about DHS, DOC, DPS, of just deciding that we're going to do things differently without any statutory change whatsoever because the administration just suddenly decided they were going to. That's not how these things should work. I just want to put that on record.
Thank you, Representative Hudson. Any other follow-up? Representative Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for providing some clarification. I just wanted to just get a little further point to that. So basically what MDE just, it was an interpretation and a decision made at the agency. Is that accurate?
Representative Rajib. I'm sorry I demoted you, Mr. Rajib.
Chair Joachim, Representative Bakeberg, it was just, you know, in our review of the lease levies, we looked at the statutes explicitly and it did not mention graduation ceremonies, and it laid out the instructional purposes and it laid out the storage and with graduations, you know, and Representative Green did bring this point forward of it being a culmination of academic purposes. But it was, you know, as I laid out in those UFARS codes, it was for instructional purposes working towards the graduation. And so I think that kind of what led to the decision of not including the graduation ceremony.
Representative Baker, follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for that. I 100% agree with Representative Green. Graduation is the culmination of everything that we do in school. And so this lease levy authority can be used for the accumulation of the credits, but someone made the determination that it can't be used for the celebration of the accumulation of those credits. That's a huge disconnect. So now we're taking committee time to discuss this. The other piece, so that's the MDE side of this. The other side of this, and maybe if Mr. Morstead or Representative Green can clarify, it sounds like there's two issues within this bill. One is the MDE interpretation, which I want to point out, I appreciate the delay in giving districts a year, so I appreciate that. But also in this is the University of Minnesota made the decision as well. So were districts, so, you know, graduation planning is you know, going right now. Were school districts left kind of in limbo and had to scramble very quickly, or did the U give you that same latitude that the department did?
Representative Green.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. Thank you for the question, Representative Bakeberg. And I will let you, Osseo, respond to this as well. You know, the U's decision, I worked very hard when the U came out with that decision to speak with everyone at the U that I could. all the way up to Dr. Cunningham and had a conversation with her about this and how, you know, districts put their budgets together well a year and ahead. So canceling, even though there was nothing, there was no contract in writing, but in good faith, this is, you know, Edina's been using Mariucci for years. And so it really put districts in a tough position. So that added to then them not being able to use lease levy dollars to accommodate for that. So it's a both and. So I will pass it over to my testifier.
Go ahead.
Thank you. And I guess what I would add to that is that the scramble this caused, it gave us, call it a roughly 8-month window to solve the problem, but also pitted 20-plus districts against each other in a battle for who gets what spot. You know, for my district, I have 3 high schools, and we stack all 3 of the graduations into the same day for our 3 traditional schools. And so we need the facility from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. to pull that off. And you're trying not to change a calendar that's been set for 2 years and make that adjustment because families have planned for that, and they're already planning for family members from out of state to come in for that particular event. So, yeah, it's there was some notice, but not anywhere near the level of thought that MDE provided in giving us more than a year's time to make those kinds of changes. We could actually implement a change into our budget cycle with the time MDE gave us. We couldn't do that with the time that the U gave us.
Representative Bakeberg, just a quick one, then we'll go to Chair Krusha for a wrap-up.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Just from and maybe Representative Green, you and I could talk more about this or different members. The U received bonding dollars of about $7 million in 1996 for Mariucci. I think we could definitely have a conversation that if state bonding dollars are going to be used for a facility, that facility should be open to our schools to be able to use that facility. So just a comment, more of... So I would like us to move in a direction like that, that if we're going to be using bonding dollars, that we don't throw our school districts in a lurch. And families, Mr. Morstead hit the nail on the head. This is a huge event. People are planning this for months and months in advance. So thank you. Thank you for the bill.
Thank you. Chair Krusha, and then I'll go to Representative Green for wrapping up.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Green, for the bill. I'm just going to be, MDE, I get you, your job is to interpret this stuff. You did that. We could have made a legislative change and go back. The problem that we have here, Representative Bakeberg highlighted out, and I'm just going to take it up a little bit. Any higher ed institution, frankly, any public institution that's going to ask for bonding, I'm not going to fight that, but if you're not going to find a way to work with our schools for these venues, even though these students all work through your facilities as they go through life, whether it's they come up in tournaments, they become U athletes and all that, I'm just going to put you on notice that if you're not going to work with these schools and if you're going to find ways to increase their prices, we're going to find ways to take your bonding dollars away.
Thank you, Chair Krusha. Representative Green, please wrap up your bill.
Yeah, thank you so much, Chair Uokaim, and thank you, Chair Krusha, for those comments as well. Just a real quick wrap up here. I just want, for the record, too, this is optional for districts. The levy is capped at $212 per student, so there is no requirement that a district would need to do this. And then also included in here is a one-time provision to approve lease costs for 2026 for this spring, and I've had conversations with MDE about how we do maybe some technical changes to make sure that we're able to do that and be able to do that effectively. And then, too, I want to respond to Representative Bakeberg's comment about the University of Minnesota. I would be lying if I said I wasn't enormously disappointed in the events that took place with the canceling of graduation. It was a huge price tag to our school districts, that decision. And I believe it was made in a bit of a vacuum. And so if anyone is willing to work with me on that to see what we can do with better partnership with our school, our public school institutions in the state, both at the elementary level, secondary level, and the higher ed, I am more than willing to work with you on that, Representative Bakeberg. So this was great cooperation from across the aisles today. So thank you, appreciate that as well.
Thank you. Representative Green renews her motion that House File 3790 is laid over for possible inclusion. With that, thank you, testifiers, for being here. We will move on to Representative Green's next bill, which is the next item on the agenda, House File 3654. Representative Green, would you like to move your bill before the committee for possible inclusion?
Yes, thank you so much. Chair Youakim, I will move House File 3654 for possible inclusion at a later date.
Thank you, members. House File 3654 is before the committee. Representative Green, proceed with your testimony.
Thank you so much, Chair. House File 3654 addresses something we have known for more than two decades here in the state. The cost of employing educators and running schools is not the same across Minnesota. Multiple studies have documented both wage and cost of living differences across our regional economic development regions, and they have recommended that our funding system reflect those realities. Yet our formula still largely assumes a uniform cost structure statewide. Wages and benefits make up 75 to 80% of a school district's budget. When labor markets differ significantly, districts in higher cost regions are placed at a structural disadvantage, not because they are mismanaging resources, but because the formula does not recognize regional economic realities. So what 3654 does, it implements these longstanding recommendations by establishing a geographic wage index to reflect regional wage differentials in a transparent and data-driven way. And I'm going to just move to testifiers who can talk about the specifics better than I can.
Yes, that sounds good. We have on here, actually, why don't we have, there's no fiscal note. I was trying to see if there was runs, so we will just move on to testifiers. With that, why don't we have Matt Woodard and Paul Borgay come up to the testifier table, and I apologize in advance for saying those names wrong. So once you get settled, go ahead, and Director of Business Service Woodard can kick us off. Go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, committee members, Mert Woodard, Director of Finance and Operations with the Edina Public Schools, also current Vice President of the Minnesota Association of School Business Officials, also representing the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. A frozen local optional revenue allowance means each year districts absorb inflationary cost increases, salaries, benefits, utilities, special education, cross-subsidy growth, without a corresponding revenue adjustment. Over the last 10 years, that compounding gap has become structural. In Edina, that gap required a $7.6 million cost containment exercise over two fiscal years just to preserve a 6% unassigned fund balance. Edina currently ranks 326 out of 329 independent school districts in administrative costs. We are a very lean district. We don't have much fat to trim. We direct all of our resources to the classroom. Yet Edina consistently also ranks top three in the state in MCA proficiency as well as ACT scores. Maintaining those excellent results requires maintaining the excellent staff behind it. We're not asking for more money. We're simply asking to maintain what we have. Some may look at Edina and assume that we're fine. We are not. We rank 322nd out of 329 school districts in general education state aid. Our residents have proven time and time again that they're willing to chip in with voter-approved levies. We're capped with our operating referendum, so we rely on local optional revenue in addition to that revenue source, as do all school districts across the state of Minnesota, rural and metro alike. This House File 3654 is precisely what we need. It will help all school districts. I'm also a resident of Edina. The city in their 2026 property tax levy included sufficient funds to add six emergency management services personnel to help staff a new fire station. Not one ballot was cast. They simply had the authority to raise the money that they need to operate in a way they think will benefit all residents of the city. School districts need similar flexibility, again, not to grow, but simply to maintain our operations and provide excellent education to all residents and students. Please support this bill.
Thank you, Director Woodard. Next up, go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Paul Bourgeois, Executive Director of Finance and Operations for Minnetonka Public Schools. Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Green, members of the committee for this opportunity to testify. I'm representing the 48 districts and 478,000 students of MSD, which is 55% of all Minnesota students, and actually more students than actually 17 states have. And also MASBO, School Business Officials, which is all districts across the state. Back in August of 1857, the Constitutional Convention of the Minnesota Territory, I went back and read through it, put together the original constitution for the future state. Article 1 was a Bill of Rights. Articles 2 for 7 dealt with organizing the district, governor, legislature, judiciary, et cetera. Article 8, the very first thing after organizing the state government was this. It shall be the duty of the legislature to establish a general and uniform system of public schools. So even back then, 169 years ago, they put teachers in front of students as a high priority, the highest priority of the state, right after funding the or organizing the government. Over the last two biennia, the state expenditure budget has been up about 35% higher than the 22-23 biennium. At the same time, AMSD districts, per the member survey data that Executive Director Kroonquist has provided to me, have had over $1 billion in budget shortfalls in their general operating funds that they've had to solve for to balance their budgets. You know, the resulting budget balancing requires reductions in all areas, and as Mr. Woodward said, we've looked at, everybody's looking at all areas, and it's not just in teaching positions, but it's a matter of fact, as Representative Green mentioned, that about, it's mainly personnel, and 60 to 70% of a general operating fund budget for every school district is actually teaching staff. So we lose teaching staff. The state has expended significant dollars out of the E12 budget pie slice on new initiatives over the last 4 years for various good reasons. Many of those initiatives, though, have required us to spend money on things other than keeping teachers in front of students. And so the result is that we've lost positions across the state, across AMSD, over the last 4 years, thousands of fewer teachers in front of students. What we now call local education revenue has been frozen since July 1st of 2014. School districts have lost $255 per student to inflation since then, hence the request to restore that loss. Local education revenue is critical to keeping teachers in front of students, as it is no strings attached revenue like the basic formula. It really could be named local necessity revenue. It is that important to all of us. Restoring local education revenue back to its original purchasing power is critical to keeping teachers in front of students. These last 4 years has taken a toll. We need to keep teachers in front of students, and we need to keep the teachers that we have. These funds will be put to good use keeping teachers in front of students, so thank you for helping us make the main thing, like the original Constitutional Convention back in 1857, and help us keep teachers in front of students. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, Mr. Strom, can you please just briefly talk about the first two tiers of LOR and the per pupil formula and how those first two tiers are capped at a certain amount?
Madam Chair, committee members, the local optional revenue in its current formula has two tiers. $300 per pupil was originally a part of the referendum authority referred to as board-approved referendum revenue. That was moved in a few years ago and carries the equalizing factor of $880,000 per pupil. So relatively more state aid goes out under the first tier, under the first $300 per pupil, but still for most districts, the local optional revenue is primarily local levy. For many districts with state average or higher tax bases, it's all local levy. The second tier is $424 per pupil, and that's equalized at $671,000, which is well below the state average, and just a handful of districts receive state aid for that tier. So it's the sum of those two tiers equalized at different levels that are a mix of aid and levy, primarily levy for most districts. And local optional revenue is just available to school districts.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. And Mr. Strom, can you briefly explain what House File 3654 does with those two tiers and then the increase?
Madam Chair, members, so the House File 3654 combines the two tiers into one. As Business Manager Bourgeois mentioned, it increases the amount by $255 per pupil for all school districts, and then it adds a regional growth factor for those whose average wage in their region is greater than the state average. And I would guess that that's somewhere in the range of a 3 or 4% adjustment for those districts, but I don't have good data on that as of yet.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. Sorry, I have been caring about this bill for about 3 or 4 years now, and I know it has The formulas have been old and they need to be rebased and relooked at. And like you said, the aid and levy mix is way off now where it's mostly levy and a lot less aid. So thank you, and thank you for Representative Green. This is my little editorializing for carrying this bill. I still think it should be solely in the tax committee since it is a property tax break, but be willing to compromise with them and take care of the per pupil formula increase if they take care of the rest. But that's for another day when we actually have some money on the table. But thank you. And with that, members, I will move to the table for questions. Representative, Chair Kreisha. Okay.
I thought you were rolling into the close.
Nope, I was just hyping the bell just a little bit, shamelessly. Anybody have any questions at the table or comments? Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I saw some stuff in here about regional average wage and stuff. What's the definition of the, how's it broken up for regions?
Senator Green or one of the testifiers? Oh, Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Kwan, the language in the bill refers to the state's economic development regions as the regions that will be used, and the wage is collected by the Department of Economic Development. I forget what the first E is for. Employment. Thank you. So DEED collects that information, and the school districts, according to the bill, would be counted by where their administrative office is located as to which economic development region they'd be in.
Representative Kwan, follow up.
Thank you. Part of my concern there is because of, I've got very rural districts, school districts in my district, but I also have Rochester. And with the main employer being Mayo Clinic, and the latest study came out that is actually a higher cost of living down there than up in the metro, I'm concerned that this calculation would skew the average wage quite a bit above what the people actually live in, you know, the families in the rural districts that are around there. And so I'd like, you know, it's being tabled, I understand. I'd like for some better clarifications and, you know, it'd be nice to maybe see a map or something telling us, because I think there may need to be some tweaking to this. And I'm glad Edina's in the top three. One of my school districts, which is maybe the second or third lowest per pupil funded, is number two MCA in math, or I mean in reading, number three in math. But the funding is getting to a crisis level because of the way it's thrown into the formula, and the lowest base is pretty low. I don't want this to be biased because of the way things are calculated, and I think all of us need to have a better picture of what this, if passed, would affect all the districts around them. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Kwan. Any other questions or thoughts at the table? I know there's some districts that are really interested in LOR and have been for a while. Seeing none, I'll send it over to Chair Kreisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Green, and thank you, Chair Youakim. I know working on equalization has been a priority, and I've heard that, and you're very authentic in your comments. I know you've worked in all that as well, and how this fits in with the tax committee as well. I also appreciate Representative Green. I see the authors on this, and I'm seeing those three working together more and more. So you, Representative Ray Rauer Myers, continue to build those relationships. I think that's very good. A couple of things just on this bill. It doesn't fit with our zero levy target. That's going to be very difficult. So it's important to have this conversation, but we still do have the zero levy target. The other thing that I would raise up, and I've heard this now a couple times in the committee, just for committee's sake, those of you that want to quote the Constitution, remember, I'm the guy that's trying to change the Constitution. I want to get rid of adequate funding and make this on excellent student results and take it paramount up. So that constitutional language was built at a time that schools were way different, the society was way different, and we need to revamp that. So you're not winning favors with me on that one, but I've heard it a couple times. The other thing that I just want to bring up on this is I think that as we try to fight these disparities, we have to remember that one of my goals would be to is get us off the reliance on local levies and try to equalize some of these disparities. That's very, very difficult for schools across the country, across the state. And I would be remiss if I didn't go back to comments, those of you that may have been here as long as I have, to my former representative and friend, Tom Manzels, who would say this causes the problem between silk stockings and wool stockings. We have to watch out for those disparities. That doesn't work in the education finance realm. And so I think those should be ironed out and worked on as well, but we have a zero levy target, so this will be very difficult. And then, of course, compensatory, a Blue Ribbon Commission, and many other things facing us. So, but thank you for bringing the bill up. It's not that I'm opposed to the bill. I just think there's a lot more conversations and broader things we should go to. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair Krisha. Yes, this is a conversation that doesn't seem to go away because it just keeps getting worse. So thank you. Representative Green, would you like to do closing comments?
Yeah, thank you so much, Chair Youakim, and thank you for your comments, Chair Krisha and Representative Kwam. I appreciate your comments. I took notes, and I do think it begs for more conversation. You know, education finance is so complex, and we do have to make sure that we're looking out for every single kid in the state in our public school system. And I think this bill is an important first step, because this bill has been around for a long time, but I'm happy to continue the conversation. So appreciate the time today in committee.
Thank you, Representative Green. And with that, Representative Green renews your motion 3654 be laid over. Members, we're going to have a quick switch on the agenda. Representative Ray Brower is stuck in higher ed right now, so we're going to bring Representative Vernig up for House File 3470. Yes.
Thank you.
Representative Vernig, welcome to your committee. Would you like to move House File 3470 before the committee for it being laid over for possible inclusion?
Yes, please, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Vernig. With that, members, we have House File 3470 before us, and go ahead and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Youakim, Chair Krisha, and committee members. House File 3470 is a bill for Independent School District 197, West St. Paul, Mendota Heights, and Eagan. This bill would allow a one-time fund transfer from the Building Construction Fund to the Operating Capital in the General Fund. This has been done several times in the past, and I actually have two testifiers here to tell us more about it.
Wonderful. Why don't your two testifiers come up? That's Dr. Peter Olson-Skog and Sarah Larson. Go ahead, get settled. And Dr. Olson-Skog, why don't you start first stating your name for the record and proceeding.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Peter Olson-Skog, and I am here to testify in regard to House File 3470. So I'm the superintendent of School District 197 in West St. Paul, Mendota Heights, and Eagan, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak in favor of this bill. And I'd ask you in advance for some forgiveness for a little bit of a folksy approach to it. So here we go. When I was young, my grandmother My grandmother used to send me to the store to buy a gallon of milk. And back then, it would cost about a dollar, maybe more, maybe $1.50. She'd send me with a couple bucks. Today, in the Twin Cities, a gallon of milk is more about $3 or $4. So if she used to send me with a couple dollars and now gives me $3, it might look like I'm getting a lot more money. But in reality, I'm just trying to come home with the same gallon of milk. Public education works like that. When people look at school funding over time, they see the dollar amounts going up, but when districts account for inflation and rising costs, the purchasing power of those dollars have steadily declined. Now, imagine when sending me for milk, my grandmother added something else to the list. She asked me, while you're there, grab a candy bar, please. She did really like Snickers, by the way. So that's great when there's enough money left over in your pocket. She gave me $2. It only cost $1. I could handle that. But if the price of milk goes up and the money doesn't keep pace, eventually you'll have to make a choice. You either come home with milk and no candy bar, or you come home with the candy bar and no milk. Now, to stay true to the analogy, what's happened here is that we had some money that was allocated to a very specific purpose, and it was for a candy bar. But now we can no longer afford the milk, and the candy bar was a nice to have, and the milk is necessary. And we're not asking for more money, we're simply asking to use some of the money that we had for the candy bar to afford the milk. Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee, for your consideration of this bill, and I would stay for any questions.
Thank you. Go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee, and Representative Vernon, for having us here. My name is Sarah Larson, and I'm the very proud chair of the school board for District 197. I'm going to be less folksy, but thank you, Peter. House File 3470 is a very practical and fiscally responsible proposal. Right now, our district has funds that are restricted specifically for internal air quality projects. Those funds remain available for that purpose, but if we do not have a qualifying project, those dollars simply sit unused until another qualifying project is identified. This bill would allow us to use those dollars for other capital needs, and we do have those needs across the district when it's appropriate. Importantly, this proposal does not raise taxes, and it does not require new state funding. It gives our district the flexibility to use our resources that already exist in a way that better serves our students and our taxpayers. We've been very transparent with our community about this request. The concept has been discussed at our annual meeting with our legislators, who I see a few of, so hello, at two of our public school board meetings and in multiple community conversations. The feedback received has been consistently positive, with people understanding the basic principle behind our request. In a year when I know there are many competing financial pressures and precedence for all of you, House File 3470 represents a common sense solution that costs the state nothing, does not raise taxes, and allows our district to address real needs in our schools. So super grateful for your time and consideration.
Thank you so much. With that, members, we'll go to the table for any questions. Representative Perez-Vega.
I don't have any questions. I just want to say thank you for all the work that you do for our 197 kids in West St. Paul and Mendota Heights area. And I also appreciate our superintendent, who has the great use of storytelling and metaphorically speaking, always with the grocery analogy, whether it's eggs, milk, or Snicker bars. So thank you, Superintendent. And I appreciate you bringing this bill, Representative.
Thank you, Representative Perez-Vega. Any other questions? Representative Flaherty.
Thank you. Thank you, Rep. Burnig. I also wanted to commend you for being responsible on this decision and also with finding a vendor. And it makes sense for your request, and thank you for bringing your request. It's not asking for any other dollars.
Thank you, Representative Flaherty. Anyone else before I go to Chair Crescia? Chair Crescia.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Vernig. And just so you know, I support the bill. As the guy, one of many who believes in local control and fund transfer flexibility, I'm there. I would also, just a couple things that I want to add. I believe, for clarification's sake, when there is an excess, the money's supposed to go back to the tax rolls. But that just so we're clear on that. But the way I see this is you've already had the conversation with the public. You've done the right thing. You've already gotten the approval. Everything's local, and therefore those conversations should be held there. The other thing I wanted to say, Superintendent, in the other body, and I didn't hear the exact quote, so I'm going to be very careful how I do this, but I heard there were some disparaging comments about how superintendents manage money, and it was not anybody in this body in that. I just want to say for the record, I am not in that camp. I believe the superintendents and the school boards are doing admirable jobs, and they're working with the constraints they have. So those comments that folks may have heard from somebody in the other body, I just want to make sure that that is echoed here, that that is not the case. And I love the folksy thing, but just ask. Just ask. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair Crescia. Thank you, Representative Vernig, for bringing this forward, and Representative Vernig for your closing comments.
Just thank you, Chair Joachim, Chair Crescia, and committee members. I'd like to renew my motion that House File 3470 be laid over for consideration and possible inclusion.
Thank you, Representative Vernig. That motion is accepted, and it's laid over. With that, members, I think we are still going to switch up the agenda, and we're going to go next to Representative Sensor Murrah. Representative Sensenmura, welcome to your committee. Would you like to move House File 1099 over for possible inclusion, laid over for possible inclusion in the bill?
Yes.
Members, this is the bill I was talking about where we're going to start the discussion on special education bill backs. With that, go ahead and proceed. Sorry, you do have a DE1. Would you like to move the DE1 before the committee?
Yes, I would. This gets the bill in the shape that I would like, updating the dates because the bill was drafted last year.
Thank you, members. Any questions on the DE1? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed say no. The DE1 has to House File 1099 has been adopted. With that, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Chair Krisha, and members of the committee. Happy to be before you today to present House File 1099. I also really want to thank Mr. Strom and Ms. Para and the department for their help with this bill. As you will see, special education tuition billbacks are deep in the weeds of our state special education formula. So I know that I myself have had to get walked through it many, many a time. But I really am excited to be starting this conversation today because I know that this is an issue that deeply impacts my district, but also districts across the state. In Minnesota, over 70,000 students attend charter schools and more than 90,000 students open enroll into neighboring districts. If these students receive special education services, a portion of those costs of the services is billed back to the district in which the parents reside. This is often known as a home district. These tuition bills now total over $250 million statewide, and for my district of Minneapolis alone, these costs are over $30 million. And we have Mr. Strom has provided us with a rough estimate based on the February forecast of what these cost each district. The challenge districts face is that they do not receive any federal, state, or local funding for a student who leaves the district for a charter or neighboring district, yet they must pay a portion of the cost of providing those special education services. House File 1099 would reduce the amount charter schools bill back to the resident districts from 80% to 50% of the unreimbursed portion of special education costs. The state would then pick up the rest, and the state share would increase. And really important to say this, charter schools would not see any decrease in their funding. If you talk with your local districts, you may hear what I am hearing. The tuition bills from charter schools are increasing much faster than the revenue increases that the state provides to districts. This makes it really difficult for our local schools to provide the same level of support for students with special needs because funding is being diverted to cover these rapidly rising costs. We need to look at these issues of fairness and equity when a student's needs can be resourced significantly more at a charter school than they can at a traditional public school. Last year, the legislature tasked the Blue Ribbon Commission on Special Education to come back with recommendations on if it is possible to slow the growth in tuition bills. But in the meantime, this bill would help districts being impacted by these costs, which are growing at a large and unsustainable rate. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I do have some testifiers, but I also don't know if you would like first to have nonpartisan run through the numbers.
Yes, Mr. Strom, who would you like to have run through the numbers?
So I think there's both a fiscal note and then also individual district.
Whoever would like to go first. Ms. Beckel.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Solveig Beckel, House Fiscal. There's a fiscal note in your packet for House File 1099. It's coded 1099-3A. And this is for the bill as amended by the DE before you. So the fiscal costs for this bill are anticipated to be $41.626 million in fiscal year 27, and then $75.502 million in fiscal years 28 and 29 combined. If you take a look at page 2 and 3, it discusses the smaller part of the bill, which is just MDE explaining that there will be some minute IT costs to implementing this bill. Effectively, it requires a few system updates, adding a number of data fields, and so their estimate for that is about $19,000. The main part of the fiscal note is on page 3. You can see that the chart here shows in the first few rows the overall cost of special education in for House File 1099. Then in the next few chunk of rows, what it is currently in the February forecast. And then you can see the difference. So House File 1099 costs minus the February forecast, how those costs are different. And then if you look all the way over to the right side, you can see the total change there. And that's the total change in special education entitlement in the bottom right-hand corner. And so then they take those numbers under the final total, and they put those into the shifting chart, which is below the larger chart. Special education costs are shifted a little bit differently than your regular aid costs. And so these are shifted to get the costs I mentioned earlier in the first part of the bill, plus the IT costs that occur only in fiscal year 27. And Madam Chair, that's the fiscal note.
Thank you, Ms. Beckel. Mr. Strom?
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, members, there's also a district-by-district printout in your packet. That printout is based on very preliminary information for the current school year. This printout is organized with districts in ascending district number order. The first column shows the regular special education aid for each district, which totals about $1.7 billion statewide. The second part of the special education formula is the excess cost formula, and that provides another $596 million per pupil. Skip the cross subsidy category for a moment. There's a small amount for the transportation for homeless pupil aid. We talked about this in the policy committee yesterday for a moment. Generally, that aid is covered under the first category, depending on which of the three formulas a district falls under. But in the years when it does not, then the full amount of the pupil transportation of homeless students is covered in that column labeled homeless aid. There's a hold harmless aid on the formula of about $16.2 million. And then for charter schools currently, as Representative Sensamira mentioned, the current process is districts receive their special education formula up front, which is roughly 60% of the total of their costs. And then the remainder for charter schools and open enrolled students is billed back to the resident district, save some percentage. For charter schools, 10% is paid by the charter school, 10% is charged to the state, and you can see that 10% here, that $9.9 million. And the remainder then is billed back of their unreimbursed costs is billed back to the resident school district or the home school district. And this under current law then totals about $2.8 billion of special education revenue for the current school year. Importantly, on that net tuition billback column, you can see that total zero statewide, but you can see for the cooperatives and charters that the amount being billed back there is the total of the $250 million that the author mentioned. What that means then is that amount comes back to the district. And there's a bit of a timing issue, but I think the easiest way to think about it is under the cross-subsidy, then half of that amount is covered by the cross-subsidy aid. So you add those categories as well as the district's own cross-subsidy. So if you add those columns across the page, then you get the total for each district. So what this bill would be doing is moving money from that tuition billback category over to the charter adjustment category. So there'd be no change in revenue for folks, but the payer of that revenue, an extra 30 percentage points, would be moving out of the net tuition billback category and into the charter adjustment category. So in sum, Madam Chair, that's how to read this printout. Again, a reminder that special ed costs often aren't more fully known until the end of the school year. So this is an estimate at this point in time.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. With that, members are...
Oh. Quick question for Mr. Strom.
Yes, Chair Krisha.
Thank you. And Mr. Strom, thank you for that, and thank you, Ms. Beckel. Just curious, would there be a difference then between the billbacks between districts?
Good question, Chair Krisha. Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Chair Kreisha, the current billback process is essentially 80% for the districts built back. For the charters, 80% is built back to the resident district, and then this 10 percentage points is paid for by the state. So in some ways of thinking, the resident district is still getting that same 80%. But the change there is slightly different on the way that tuition billback works. So there's a group of cooperative units and a very few number of charter schools that have 100% billback. But those, for purpose of this analysis, you can see it shouldn't probably raise to the question of getting into this analysis. So the billback essentially is handled the same in terms of how the revenue flow works, but a portion of the charter billback flows to that state category instead.
Chair Kreisha?
I love education finance. Thank you, Mr. Shaw.
Nothing's ever easy, is it? Any other questions?
Oh, no, we have... What am I doing?
We have more testifiers. That was a clarifying question. I have not had enough coffee today. With that, we will go to the testifiers. So I see have started... started sitting at the table, which would be great. Why don't we start with Dr. Lisa Sales-Adams. Go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Dr. Lisa Sales-Adams. Madam Chair, committee members, as I said, I'm Dr. Lisa Sales-Adams, the superintendent for Minneapolis Public Schools. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of House File 1099, and thank you to Representative Centimura for authoring the bill. I'll be making brief opening remarks and then turning it over to Minneapolis Public Schools Associate Superintendent for Special Education and Student Support Services, Dr. Liz Keenan. First, I'd like to speak to the issue of special education and the importance of robust and predictable special education services for students in Minneapolis and across the state. I understand that there are concerns about the growth in state special education aids. When nearly 1 in 5 Minnesota students is receiving special education services, and schools are being asked to support students with significant medical needs in addition to the educational needs, I am not surprised that it is requiring more resources to meet the needs of our students as indicated in their individual education plans or IEPs. Special education is a cost reimbursement-based formula. Districts are not generating additional revenue on special education. In fact, districts like Minneapolis use non-special education general funds to support these critically important services. This underfunding, known as the cross-subsidy, was approximately $43 million in the most recent report released by the Minnesota Department of Education. And here is why House File 1099 comes in. Of course, of that $43 million cross-subsidy, I think most people would be surprised to learn that nearly 40% of that cross-subsidy is due to special education tuition bills we receive from charter schools and other districts. In other words, students who never attend a Minneapolis public school. Which specific services and supports an individual student needs is and should be determined by the family and the student's school. Resident districts should not have veto power or services provided at other charter schools, nor should resident districts have to pay for those services. If this bill becomes law, that fiscal interaction would happen between the serving district or charter school and the state as it should be. House File 1099 is a good start to begin to address this mismatch of who determines the services and who is paying for those services. And I am hopeful that the Blue Ribbon Commission on Special Education will come back with recommendations to address the issue of tuition billing. And one last plug, I do want to thank you for the increase in special education cross-subsidy reduction aid. And I urge you to rescind the $250 million cut to that aid scheduled for fiscal year 2028. Next year at this time, districts across the state will be finalizing our budgets, and we will need to factor in that cut unless you rescind it this session. Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Dr. Sales-Adams. Dr. Keenan, go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Dr. Liz Keenan. Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Dr. Liz Keenan, Associate Superintendent for Special Education and Student Support Services for Minneapolis Public Schools. Thank you for this opportunity to testify on House File 1099. I'd like to follow the Superintendent Sales Adams' testimony with a bit more background on how special education tuition billing works and how that impacts the budget of a traditional public school system. I will provide an example of how the expenses and funding flows for a student who receives special education services at a charter school. I think a good example would be a student who receives special education speech-language supports. The student spends the majority of their day in general education classroom, but meets with a special ed speech pathologist twice a week. Over the course of the year, the cost of that speech teacher's time is $10,000. The charter school submits their cost to MDE, which are run through the special education funding formula. Roughly 70% of the cost is covered by the state and federal funding. The charter school covers 10% of the remainder, and the rest is billed back to the resident school district as a special education expense for that district. For Minneapolis Public Schools, those bills are now over $30 million annually and are growing at 8 to 9% a year. If you do the math for a student who receives $10,000 of speech supports, the state picks up roughly $7,000. Minneapolis Public Schools pays $2,700, and the charter school covers $300. The resident school district is paying more for services provided at a charter school than the charter school is paying, and we wonder why the tuition bills are increasing at 8 to 9% per year. If the state of Minnesota values school choice, whether it is an open enrollment, charter schools, or post-secondary elementary enrollment options, then the state should fund it. Having your local district subsidizing the other school choices makes it much more difficult for public schools to provide the same level of support. Madam Chair, the last quick example is particularly troubling. Sparrow Academy Charter School billed Minneapolis Public Schools $669,000 for just 45 ADM or 45 students. Sparrow Academy also billed Minneapolis Public Schools $536,000 in general costs for these same students, totaling $12.2 million for 45 students at a cost of $27,000 per student. Minneapolis Public Schools cannot provide that level of support when we are subsidizing the cost of Sparrow's programming from our general fund. House File 1099 would take some of that burden off the traditional school districts, and I would encourage you to reform how charter schools' special education funding is done from the ground level up. Thank you, and I would be happy to answer any questions from you.
Thank you so much. I think we'll pull the next few testifiers up, if you could just stand by in case there's questions. We have Natasha Doctor and Joy Chenyon. Once you get settled, Natasha Doctor, why don't you go ahead and proceed. State your name for the record and where you're from, and then proceed.
Thank you so much. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Vice Chair, and committee members. My name is Natasha Doctor, and I am a social studies teacher in Minneapolis Public Schools. And currently, I serve as the first vice president of the teacher chapter for the Minneapolis Federation of Educators. And I'm here today speaking on behalf of educators in Minneapolis to testify in support of House File 1099. Every day, special educators who are classroom teachers, case managers, and our special education support assistants in Minneapolis go above and beyond to provide a caring and supportive learning environment for their students. They work to understand the unique needs of individual students, partner closely with families, create meaningful and impactful academic instruction, and advocate to ensure that a school meets the needs of the learner. However, the painful reality is Minneapolis Public Schools does not have the special education funding that it could and should have. As you all are well aware, schools across our state are facing chronic funding shortages, and we feel this particularly in special education. Every year, Minneapolis principals face difficult decisions around trying to provide excellent programming without enough financial resources. Right now, schools are currently planning for budget for next year, and I have talked to many fellow educators who are gravely concerned about how they are going to make it work with the staffing and decisions that they will have for next year. And we also do not have to be in this situation. Our state school choice laws pit schools against schools, particularly when we're seeing declining enrollment.
And I understand that many people support school choice and see it as a good option for families. However, supporting school choice does not mean that we need to support requiring districts to fund programs of competing schools. Dr. Keenan mentioned a very kind of like dramatic example, and I want to just bring everyone's attention to that again. In that specific case, we're talking about $1.2 million that is going to a different school instead of supporting kids in Minneapolis public schools, and that's unacceptable. I really urge you all to support this step in the right direction of solving this crisis around special education funding, and thank you for the opportunity to speak here today.
Thank you so much, and with that, go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, co-chairs and members. My name is Joey Chenyon. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Minnesota has more than 170 charter public schools serving over 70,000 students. That's about 8% of the state's public school population. Our students are diverse. Roughly 66% are students of color or American Indian students. About 60% qualify for free reduced price lunch. 25% are English learners, and about 17% are students with disabilities. Minnesota's charter public schools are public schools that are free, fair, and open to all students, regardless of ability or disability status. Like every public school in Minnesota, chartered public schools must follow all state and federal laws related to students with disabilities, including providing free appropriate public education under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act and implementing individualized education programs. I want to thank the chair for making the space for this conversation. At its core, this discussion is about how we best serve students with disabilities. As costs continue to rise across our state, our sector is actively working with authorizers, the Minnesota Department of Education, and service providers to identify ways to reduce costs where possible while protecting students' rights and maintaining high-quality services that meet student needs. Regarding the bill before you today, we appreciate that the language maintains current funding levels for students with disabilities who attend chartered public schools. This is imperative, as charter public schools have already received charter-specific special education reductions passed last year, along with the transportation reduction affecting both charter and traditional public schools. As a result, schools are already making difficult trade-offs. In many cases, they're forced to pull resources from general education budgets and out of the classroom to cover these costs. When that happens, interventions and prevention supports for students are often the first things that are reduced. Since 1975, when IDEA was enacted, the federal government has never fulfilled its promise to fund 40% of special education costs. And as a result, schools rely heavily on general education funds to cover the gap. Combined with the complexities when a student attends a school outside their resident district, this creates unfortunate tension across the broader public education school system between charter schools and traditional districts, between traditional districts and themselves, other traditional districts, and between districts in the state. While expensive and politically ambitious, my organization, MAX, does support simplifying the special education funding system, similar to what other testifiers have said today, eliminating the cross-subsidy and tuition billing structure, and having the state cover all costs not reimbursed by the federal government for all public schools. We recognize this bill is intended to provide financial relief for traditional districts, similar to the substantial cross-subsidy relief passed in the previous biennium. Charter schools did not directly benefit from that relief, but MAX actively supported that legislation because we believe in a thriving public school landscape that includes many quality options for families. One concern we have with this bill is that when the state moves to shift funding responsibility for only charter school students with disabilities from districts to the state, it would create a vulnerable line item target on our students with disabilities in the future. During difficult state budget times, that funding could be focused on for reductions, which needless to say would have devastating consequences for students with disabilities who attend charter public schools. The charter public school community supports reasonable, robust, and stable funding for students with disabilities, regardless of the type of public school they attend. We want to see relief for districts and stability for charter schools, and we believe the state can and should ensure full and protected funding for these students. Thank you.
Thank you so much. With that, members, we have two parents, one remote and one that's here, I believe. Why don't we have the parent that's here, Trista Schultz, join us at the table and get settled. And then we'll get our parent remote ready in the wings, Karina Alexson. Go ahead and state your name for the record, and please proceed.
Thank you. Hello, Chair and committee members. My name is Trista Schultz. I'm a parent of two children in the Minneapolis Public Schools District, where one of my children receives special education services. I'm also a lead member of Minneapolis Families for Public Schools. I'm here today to ask you to support House File 1099 and reduce the bill backs that home districts must pay to charter schools for special education costs. We want our children to succeed in the public school district where we live. We love our teachers and we love our school communities, but the reality is special education in our district is stretched incredibly thin. My child experienced 2 years in a row where his special education teacher resigned in the middle of the school year. When his SPED teacher resigned last year, they told me they were not set up to be successful serving the number of students on their caseload safely. There was not enough support staff for them to be able to do their job. Because of staffing shortages for the last 3 school years, my child has missed SPED services and has experienced situations at school that no parent should have to worry about for their child. Having a consistent teacher this school year has been so impactful for our family. It's made all the difference. I am so grateful for our current SPED teacher, and I hope that they will return next year. I think about the teachers at my children's school and the students they serve, and I know, despite the incredible work that teachers in our district are doing, they need more resources and funding to sustain these programs long term. Charter schools pulling money from our district through policy like the current bill back is a big reason why our district and schools are underfunded. Reducing charter school bill backs would allow districts to keep more special education funding for the students we already serve. It could help stabilize staffing, support teachers, and keep families like mine in our local public schools. Please support House File 1099. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for your time as well. And with that, we'll go to our remote testifier. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Hello, House Finance Committee members and co-chairs. I'm Karina Alexson. I'm a Minneapolis resident, Minneapolis Public Schools parent, a leader of Minneapolis Families for Public Schools, and an SEIU healthcare member as a paid parent on my daughter's disability waiver. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of HF 1099. Reducing billbacks as proposed in HF 1099 would make a real impact for special education students like my daughter and her classmates. Due to funding gaps, our school is balancing its budget in part by cutting one of its special education associates positions next year. Paraprofessionals like SEAs ensure that students in special education like my daughter are supported throughout the day. Spending meaningful time included with grade level peers, receiving individualized help with reading and math, and participating in fun social times like lunch and recess. Right now, when one of the paras is on PTO or is sick, my daughter and her special ed classmates take turns missing out on these parts of their days. My daughter may miss getting to do hands-on experiments in science or be stuck in a classroom instead of moving her body in gym class. Missing out on these scheduled times to use her whole body to learn in different ways results in her being less engaged in learning and more dysregulated, both at school and at home. While reducing billbacks will not fix all of the financial woes at Minneapolis Public Schools and other school districts throughout the state, it will make a noticeable difference in school budgets across the state. Please support HF 1099 so that all students with disabilities can receive the free and appropriate public education that they are legally entitled to. Your vote of support can make an impact, and our kids deserve it. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And with that, members, I think we're done with testifiers. We'll bring the questions up to the table. Any member questions? Representative Lee.
Less a question, more a comment. Just want to thank Representative Sinsamira for coming up with a solution to both support our students that require special education and also our school districts that want to make sure that we can pay everybody. Thanks.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Well, Representative Sensenmura, Chair Krisha for the wrap-up, and then we'll go to Representative Sensenmura.
Thank you, and thank you, Representative Sensenmura, for the bill. I'll just reiterate, Chair Joachim and I and members, we worked really hard not to get any cuts out of this committee, and so I'll leave it at that.
Thank you, Representative Sensenmura. I think you did a really good, you did such a good job at explaining bill backs with Mr. Strom that no one has any questions. So with that, Representative Sensenmura, thank you so much for bringing this up to the committee again and to start this discussion off. Why don't you go ahead and wrap up your bill?
Yeah. Thank you, committee members. As you heard, this is a issue that is really deeply affecting the district that I represent. If you go to your district run sheets, you know, Minneapolis is easy to spot because it's 1.2, so it's always at the top, and you can see our net tuition bill back is $37 million. So, I know that this will be a hard year to move anything, and so I just see this really as a start to the conversation. You know, we at the state are dealing with the deficit that we get from the federal government, who has never fulfilled their promise of how much they should be paying for special education students to make sure that they receive the funding that they deserve. And then we often pass that on to our districts. And, you know, when I came to the legislature and learned about this kind of strange interaction between charter schools and the resident or home districts, and especially learned more about how it was impacting Minneapolis, I felt like it was something that I really needed to look into and try to figure out some solution to, because right now it really is pitting our schools against schools, and a student can be receiving, you know, much more robust or expensive services at a charter school than they would be at a traditional public school, and I do think that that is creating an unhealthy competition between our schools. So this is an issue I would really like to see us dig into in the future as we continue to just advocate more broadly for our special education funding. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Sensenmura, and thank you for the reminder that the federal government in 1972 promised to pay 40%, and they've never paid over 17. Mm-hmm. So thank you. Would you like to renew your motion that House File 1099 be laid over?
Yes.
As amended? That is the motion. House File 1099 has been laid over as amended. With that, Representative Radar, why don't you join us, and welcome to your committee. And House File 3371 is, would you like to move 3371 before the committee for possible inclusion? Go ahead.
Thank you so much, Chair Joachim. I appreciate that. And I just want members of the committee refer you that House File 1099 includes a chart in it that I'm going to refer to, but you'll find it in the packet for Bill 1099.
Thank you. And Representative Ray Barrows moved House File 3371 before the committee. Proceed.
Great. Again, thank you so much. I truly appreciate hearing this bill. This is a bill that I've actually been working on since the fall of 2018. Long before I ever knew that I would run for office. That year, I was teaching middle school in St. Francis. We came back to school that fall with 20% less staff than we had the year before due to budget cuts. It really felt unsafe. It felt like there was not enough adults in the building to keep the students safe. We started the year with 350 middle schoolers in the lunchroom with no supervision other than the nutrition staff who were serving lunch. Every teacher, every para was booked bell to bell in their schedule. As you can imagine, that didn't work very well. Within a week, the assistant principal was pulled to monitor the cafeteria for half of their day. Not a great use of their salary. So we also began that year with one counselor for 1,000 middle school students. Not a great ratio. The recommendation is one for 250. That year, for the first time, I had one of my students attempt suicide. I taught seventh grade. They were 12 years old. Thankfully, they survived. When they were coming back to school, I felt personally responsible for this student like I did all of my students. And I wanted to make sure there was a reentry plan. Sorry, I didn't know I was going to get emotional. It's been a while. I wanted to make sure I had a reentry place in plan for that student. I went to talk to our one counselor, our one social worker, our one assistant principal, and our one principal, and not one of them knew who the student was. Our kids were falling through the cracks. To say I was fired up would probably be an understatement. I was on a mission to figure out why we were so broke. Those around me had various hypotheses, such as the former superintendent didn't make good decisions or the school board was to blame. But really, it goes all the way back to 2003 when there were large cuts to funding in education. And then from 2003 to 2023, state funding did not keep up with inflation, and every year we fell further behind. So now I'm going to talk about that chart that's in your packets. It is from an independent agency, so Ehlers delivers independent guidance across all areas of public finance. We used them when I was a Coon Rapids City Council member to do independent finance information for us. And what it shows us when they take the general education formula from 2003 to 2025, you can see that over time we don't keep up with inflation. Had the allowance increased by inflation each year, we would currently be paying $8,645 per pupil. The difference is we are actually paying $7,281. That's over $1,000 less than we were in 2003 if we adjust for inflation. 18.7% less. So with the amount we're behind in state funding, many school districts have gone out for voter-approved levies, and many, the majority actually, have passed them. Unfortunately, the districts that year after year cannot pass a levy are really hurting. That is why St. Francis was so broke. The combination of the state funding not keeping up with inflation and not being able to pass a levy. This is where my bill comes in, just to help fill that gap a little bit to help those districts get by. It simply raises the cap that a school board can vote to levy from. It's a total of, and Mr. Strom can give you the details, but it's a total of two different pots of money, but basically it totals to $724 a pupil, and it raises that cap to $824 a pupil for those districts that have not passed a voter-approved referendum revenue to help them get by until we can fund education at the 2003 level. That is our ultimate goal. For state funding to, fill that gap and get back there. But as we know, we do not have a target for this committee this year, and so the money is not there. And so this bill is just a way to help those school districts that are struggling the most right now. Thank you. And with that, I can have my testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Ray Bauer. With that, we will move to testimony, and I have up here first. Sorry, just trying to get to the right page. Thank you, that helps. Sarah Paul, Superintendent of North Branch, and Charlotte Johnson, who is a student. So why don't we go ahead with the superintendent first, and then state your name for the record and proceed.
All right, Sarah Paul. Good afternoon, co-chairs and members of the committee. My name is Sarah Paul. I'm the superintendent of North Branch Area Public Schools, the chair of the North Branch Economic Development Authority, and a nationally certified school business official committed to responsible school finance and school stewardship. Throughout my career, 30-year career, in urban, suburban, and rural districts, I have often heard the statement that a child's education should not vary by zip code. Yet in Minnesota today, it still does. Even without an operating referendum for more than two decades, our school district has worked within our school board fund balance target to create opportunities that connect students to real careers. Our Viking Bridge program models how students can graduate with a plan by linking together hands-on learning opportunities and careers in manufacturing, engineering, technology, and the skilled trades. Through the North Branch Economic Development Authority, we are also working to strengthen our local economy. One example is bringing Louisiana Pacific to North Branch. This project will create more than 100 livable wage jobs, averaging $32 an hour, above the DEES benchmark of $23 in our region.
Preparing students for opportunities like these requires resources. Most Minnesota school districts operate with significantly more referendum revenue than North Branch. Our district operates with zero operating referendum revenue, while some districts receive more than $5,000 per student in additional revenue. House File 3371 takes a modest step to address this inequity while maintaining local control. The students with me today, Grace and Charlotte, are going to be illustrating what it's like for students when they experience these inequities and how differences in funding translate into differences in opportunity. I respectfully ask for your support of House File 3371. Thank you.
Thank you. Why don't we have both students come up at the same time? We have Charlotte Johnson and Grace Hilton. Go ahead, Charlotte, state your name for the record and proceed.
Hi, my name is Grace Hilton, and I'm from North Branch.
And I'm Charlotte Johnson, and I'm also from North Branch.
Co-chairs and members of the committee, my name is Grace Hilton, and I am here with Charlotte Johnson. We are students at North Branch Area High School. Today we want to show you how two students with similar interests can experience very different opportunities depending on their zip code. We are going to engage in a hypothetical conversation between two students from two different zip codes.
Hi, I am a student from the zip code of 55331.
Hi, I'm a student from zip code 55056.
We have a lot in common. We both like working with our hands, and we are both very interested in careers within manufacturing and supply chain logistics.
And we both have local employers near our schools that offer opportunities to explore those careers.
In my zip code, we have a dedicated teacher who partners with those employers. I get to spend part of my day taking high school classes and seamlessly seeing how what I'm learning is being used in the work environment.
In my zip code, we don't have a dedicated teacher for that type of program. I still want to learn those skills, but most of the time I have to complete coursework online. And I often can't take advantage of the opportunities my school has created because I don't have transportation.
High school courses connected to work-based learning experiences help students like me prepare for good-paying careers after graduation.
In my zip code, new opportunities are coming too, jobs that could pay around $32 an hour. I want to be ready for those opportunities when I graduate.
We both want to graduate with skills and a plan for our future.
But right now, our opportunities can look very different depending on our zip codes.
And that difference isn't about student effort or interest.
It's about opportunity. A student's education should not vary by zip code. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you so much, and thank you for being so creative in your presentation. With that, we have Karsten Anderson and Brett Wedlin. Could you please approach? And once you get settled, why don't you go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon. My name is Karsten Anderson, and I'm the superintendent of St. Francis. This is my fourth year there. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee, for allowing me to express support for House File 3371. The average operating referendum in the state is $865 per pupil. 27% of the districts do not have an operating levy, so their operating levy figure is zero. In the seven-county metro area, the average is $1,451 per pupil. 49 districts in the metro area have an operating referendum. Four, including St. Francis and North Branch, do not. These differences impact the ability to compete with neighboring districts for students and employees. In St. Francis, owners of a $300,000 home would pay just over $2 per month more in property taxes if the maximum was levied under the proposal. It would generate an additional $450,000 to help maintain academic support positions, behavior interventionists, and some of the programming that the North Branch students just shared with us. Recently, as you likely remember, districts were given the opportunity to extend an operating levy referendum for up to 10 years although there were very good reasons for this authority, the decision solidified the differences between schools with referendum and schools without referendum for another 10 years. It also made it more difficult for St. Francis, North Branch, and 86 other districts to pass a referendum because voting yes could mean a 20-year commitment, not just a 10-year commitment. Please support House File 3371, which promotes financial fairness between districts and provides critical revenue for smaller and more rural districts currently without a referendum. Thank you for your consideration and for everything you do on behalf of Minnesotans.
Thank you. Go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Joachim, Chair Krisha, and members. My name is Dr. Brett Wedland. I'm the Executive Director at Nova Classical Academy in St. Paul. Nova is a public charter school. We serve grades kindergarten through 12th, and we have a little over 1,000 students. I want to thank Representative Ray Brower for the bill in front of us today and for continued work to expand local optional revenue. Traditional public schools went to their voters last year with $1.6 billion of asks for funding. That tells us that public schools are struggling to meet student needs with just state funding alone. This bill helps with that struggle. Also, traditional districts are not the only public schools that are struggling financially. Compared to the school district where we are located, Nova spends $8,400 less per student, which is about 39% less expenditures per student. This bill helps with that struggle. The disparity in experiences and funding that charter schools face comes from a lot of different places. There's inequities in extended revenue time. There is inequity in amounts in long-term facilities maintenance revenue, smaller allocations for library aid, not receiving school safety aid, and an inability to levy funds from a local tax base. Without levies as a tool, charter schools must carry things in their operating budgets other schools do not. For example, Nova is currently undergoing a building expansion project. It's for things like a secure front entrance to the building and a storm shelter. Completing this project will require us to carry a six-figure annual cost in our operating budget for several decades. As you consider this legislation to support public schools, I want to emphasize that moving forward without also creating an equivalent state aid for charter schools will further the existing funding equity that charter schools face. Charter schools are by their nature smaller than the districts in which they reside. Because of this, smaller infusions of money can have oversized impacts. For example, creating an equivalent aid for charter schools of just half the baseline local optional revenue amount, that's $724, would have a huge actual impact on Nova. It would increase our staff raises from 3% to 5%. It would fund a school social worker, which we don't, like I'm in like seventh period teaching. It would fund a social worker, which we don't currently provide for our students. It would increase our instructional staff by 3%, and it would almost fully cover the costs of our expansion project. Not only could it do any of these things, it could do all of those things simultaneously. I urge you to support this legislation because it's an investment in Minnesota public schools and their students. And I also encourage you to create an equivalent aid because charter school students, including Nova's, deserve that same investment. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. With that, members, I think we're going to move to some of the I wonder if we want to go through the quick fiscal note and then the runs in the packet. So we have about, can you do it in like 2 minutes? Ms. Beckel, go for it.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Solveig Beckel, House Fiscal. You have a fiscal note in your packets for House File 3371. The first page just shows the state aid costs in this bill. The bill would cost the state more than just the state aid cost that you see there, the roughly $2 million in the first biennium and roughly $4 million in the second biennium. If you look at pages, two and three, you'll see quite a few numbers, but I'll just break it down. Essentially, the bill in total, if you added the levy costs that the state would have to buy down, the bill would cost $2.1 million in fiscal year 27. Then we're shoving all of the levy costs to fiscal years 28 and 29, so and $36.928 million in the second biennium.
Thank you, Ms. Beckel. And I think we'll skip the runs that are in the packet if you have questions for Tim so that we can go to the table for any questions from members. Members, any comments or questions? Chair Krisha does not either. So with that, we'll do closing statement. Representative Ray Rao.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. Maybe that's the benefit of going last and the time almost being out. I just really appreciate all of your time. I realize the culmination of thinking about this and working on this all these years and actually sitting here and being able to present this was a very emotional moment for me. So I'm just glad to have been able to do it, and I hope you all consider this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Ray Rao. Representative Ray Rao renews your motion that House File 3371 be laid over. Chair Krisha, would you like to go over what's happening on Tuesday?
Yes, I believe it's already been posted. Stay tuned, but we will be talking school trust lands. And by the way, Ms. Beckel, 53 seconds is what you did that up. Well done.
Thank you. With that, members, we are adjourned.